Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 15 of Screen Champs. I'm your host, Dubs, here with my co-host, the Madman Moan.
What's going on, brother?
What's happening, man? We're here. This episode feels a little heavier than most episodes. I'm not even sure how to start it, like, in a fun way, because I feel like this is almost like the Screen Champs social responsibility podcast. And there's been topics in the first 15 episodes that we've chosen not to talk about because I think our intent is to be funny and entertaining. And people just keep doing stupid shit, so now we have to keep talking about it. And then, obviously, some movies lend themselves to it, too. So I think we're still going to try and be fun and entertaining, but some of the stuff is just a little dreary.
It is. I purposely laughed a few times while you were talking, just so the audience knows that. Like, hey, we're still...
It's okay. We're still
fun. No one died, okay? No one's dead. We're still Screen Champs, fun guys. It's all good. We're going to do it in a nice, tasteful way. But yeah, I mean, you're absolutely correct. There's so much content I consume that's like kind of a downer. It's like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, that's unfortunate.
Okay, so I know this last week, Young Rock premiered. I know the Madman was hyped for this show. I did not watch it. Did it meet your expectations? Young Rock, it, NBC.
Oh, man, it did. It 100%.
Okay.
100% did. I want to say like 110%. One of the strongest showings to a show I've seen in such a long time. I want all of The Rock. The Rock now, The Rock as a kid, The Rock at 15, yikes, The Rock at 18. I want every variation of The Rock.
Did it feel like too much to have The Rock at every, and I think The Rock himself made an appearance. So we're getting like four different Rock time periods, right?
Oh, yeah.
So there's four different time periods. How long is this show? Like 3 hours long or 30 minutes?
Like, because, you know, damn, what, brother? Like, they jam-packed it into a 30-minute showing, which with trailers, I think it's like 22 minutes.
Yeah.
I think they figured out a way. That's like about average of like, what? That's four, five.
Man, whoever's editing that, Kings Stay Kings. What a goon.
You know, it's good. It's fine. Like, the whole show is like, hey, so you're going to be a president. The people don't think that you can because of Hollywood. And he's like, oh, I can't. Why? Oh, they think you're not a regular person. He's like, I'm not a regular person. Let me tell you about my life. And then that's like, we're going to get like seven seasons of like this one interview or something.
I like it.
That's just where it's at.
Yeah. Well, that's what How I Met Your Mother did. They're like, in the last, and that's How I Met Your Mother. And it's like, bro. Y'all went through the ringer for that one.
Everyone's like, yes, finally.
Yeah.
Jeez. How old did your kids grow while you were talking? Like,
and that's homegirl from Palm Springs, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What's her Miliati. Name? Miliati.
Oh, yeah. Miliati. Kristen Miliati. Miliati. Dude, I watch. Okay, so today. See, I feel the need to talk about this movie because it came out of nowhere. And it's a movie that I chose not to watch. And if you're like me. Or aspire to be like me. I get it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not a huge CGI fan. You throw too much CGI at me, I'm not about it. I understand there's CGI, you know, in everything nowadays. It's just how things get made. But if it looks fake, it just looks fake. You know, what do you want me to do?
What am I watching? A video game here?
Yeah.
What's going on? We're playing Doom?
Is this a flip book? What's going on? So, this movie Greenland comes out. It's got Gerard Butler in it. Mm-hmm. And it's about, you know, an asteroid coming to hit the Earth. And I see that the previews for this movie, and it looks like a generic, like, shitty Gerard Butler PG-13, like, action movie, you know, about the world ending, very, like, 2012. And I'm like, I'm good. I skipped this movie. Either way, I read something, I hear something, I come around to watching it. Let me tell you, Greenland is a dope movie. It was so intense.
Really?
I was stressed out the whole time.
Really?
Yes. Yes. Like I feel like most of these movies, like, it starts and they're just like, dang, what's going on? And it's just like, boom. And then just the Earth is falling apart. And that's kind of the movie. They're just running from it, whatever. This was like a family drama, like them trying to stay together. And it does mirror some other movies. And there's certain things. I wouldn't say it's the most original movie, even in this genre.
But right.
Damn, it was intense. If we're talking about like popcorn entertainment, like brainless fun, this Greenland is 100% right up my alley. I loved it. I would recommend it to anyone who just wants to have a good time.
Now, let me ask you this. Was it kind of similar to like The Impossible? Did you see that movie?
I'm a big fan of The Impossible. So, Yes, it was. It did have a lot of similarities to The Impossible, except I don't think that anything matches. Like, the emotional drain that The Impossible had on me was, it was a lot.
It was a lot.
That was a, I don't know how many times I cried in that movie, but it's more than one person should. Oh, and yeah. I definitely didn't cry during Greenland, but it was very tense. It gets tense.
So it just, okay. I get it. I get it.
But big like recommend.
Where can I see this at?
I don't know. I rented it on Vudu. So anywhere you get VOD movies, I'm sure it's like a Redbox, you know, maybe.
And it's funny that you say that you kind of avoided it, because I also kind of avoided it because of the way, like, the poster looks. It's like him holding his child, I think, or his wife. And then, like, there's like a red flare, like an asteroid, like coming down. And he looks so like, oh, like amazed or scared, or I'm like, what is this? It's so Greenland is.
That's like the safe space.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because there's the comets coming down, just taking over the world. Dude, Gerard Butler gets hit with so many like waves, you know, when some hits it goes whoosh, and like,
oh, like a sound wave.
Yeah, sound waves, yeah.
Pretty much everyone gets hurt with that when Superman flies away. Like people don't talk about that. Exactly. Superman flies away, like people are getting murdered. Like there's you're getting killed, dude. Try being next to that guy. You're gonna get like split in half.
Yeah. My guy's getting thrown around by some sound waves, along with some planes, and it's all over the place. But yeah, the first one, I literally laughed out loud. I'm not sure why. It wasn't funny at all. It was very, very intense. But yeah, he's getting thrown around by some of these things. So yeah, comments are coming down. Shit's getting real. So, well, here, let's hop in the episode here. So one of the things we talked about last week is we were going to watch the Britney Spears documentary, talk about the Britney Spears documentary. We have watched it. We're here to talk about it. Man, what are your thoughts on this Britney Spears doc?
Oh, cringe. So much cringe.
Yep.
They did her so dirty, dude. So dirty. It sucks. Because Britney Spears, icon. You're talking about icon here, right? Everyone knows who Britney Spears is. Everyone. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows. And then, you know, her life doesn't pan out the way that we want it to. And the way it was covered on media, oh, man. I forgot all about that, because I think all I remembered was just discrediting her. Just like, oh, she's crazy. Like, this man, that kind of sucks on how crazy she is. Oh, man, what a crazy joke. Like, oh, crazy, crazy, crazy. Because you see that. You see the Lindsay Lohans. You see the, Paris Hiltons, or like the Kim Kardashians. I don't know. You just see these people and you're like, whatever. They're just... they're not real human beings, whatever. Yeah. I don't care. And I feel like I got handled real quick where I felt bad. I was like, man, I past Madman Moan was a jerk.
Okay. So to be clear, when you said they did her dirty, you're talking about the people at that time, not the documentary itself, right?
Correct. Yes. Okay. The people at that time.
When I was watching the documentary, I was like, okay, so the point of this documentary is just to make me feel like shit, and everyone involved to feel like shit. And that's kind of what it did, because I would say if we're going to rate the documentary itself, I feel like there was a lot lacking. I ended up doing a lot of personal research afterwards, partly because we're doing a podcast about it, but also because I felt like there was just a lot of information that I was curious about. And the documentary just kind of felt like a rehash of things that happened, but also a reminder, like, hey, remember that you guys were all assholes about it. Every single one of you. But it was effective. People's response to it too has been like, hey, what's going on? How is this okay? And it really wasn't okay. So there's a lot of questions about the conservatorship. I mean, you know, you named Lindsay Lohan, who I feel like kind of went through a similar thing. Paris and Kim Kardashian, you know, they're just kind of rich. But I mean, we look at someone like Kanye West, who's gone through whatever Kanye is going through, and he's had some public freakouts for sure. And he's gone in and, you know, he's still in charge of all his money. He's still in charge of all his stuff. Do you think that the media made Britney crazy?
I think, I definitely think that it did. Just because the media, and also like paparazzi. Because she was the biggest person ever. Like, she was so huge that every shot they got, everything they had, it was a moneymaker. Everyone wanted to know more about this. Everyone wanted to see more of her, whether it was good or bad. She was the biggest thing. And paparazzi, you see paparazzi make people go a little, like, nuts. Like, I deal with some anxiety issues right now. I cannot imagine being a celebrity, being freaking just... photograph up the brim, every step, every walk, everything I have. Like, you see Justin Bieber, like, going off to, you see, like, so many people freak out. Kanye West as well, you know, he's just trying to eat some ice cream with his daughter or something. Like, it's like all that stuff is crazy. It will make you go nuts. But also, like, her dad, and that's a big thing. A lot of people don't know her, like, family life. A lot of people didn't know her upbringings. Everyone knows the pop star. They don't know how that pop star grew up or where they came from or who their parents are and if they're good people, if they're bad people. No one knows any of that. But you are right. I wish it could have gone more, even more into that.
I mean, she's been under the conservatorship of her father since 2008. He makes $130,000 a year in that position. So there's a lot of people who have expressed concerns. There's a big Free Britney movement. A lot of people feel a type of way about it. There's also the flip side of the fact that you do have to go to court and get the stuff done. You know, it doesn't, you know, it's not like he just wanted to do it and they let him do it. You have to go to court. I mean, you have to present evidence. Clearly something, you know, well, everything we saw in the public, you know, her shaving her head, attacking that paparazzi's car with her umbrella, all those things may have factored into it. You know, but now it's just, at what point does it end? You know, she's still a superstar. She had her Vegas residency for a while, but she doesn't have a smartphone. Like, she does not have a smartphone. She has an Instagram account. No one really knows if it's her posting or if, like, she has to facilitate it through someone else. She doesn't respond to any interviews. She's
really, to this day,
not involved. Yeah. And her Instagram videos are, like, they're weird. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. She seems out of touch. Like, the dance videos are kind of like, they're just awkward.
Bro, and that's when, all right, you know, I know you did your own research after this, when this came out. My research, it's really just me watching a compilation of those videos and the meanings behind them and, like, the stuff in the background, like, beware, like, get out, like, things like that. Like,
yeah,
I'm going down a deep, dark hole here where I'm watching, like, TikToks of people explaining, the, you know, how they talk about it in the doc.
Yeah.
I'm starting to watch all those, and it's like, I need to save Britney Spears. I need to break her out. I need to go in, kick a door down, get her give her a phone. Like, here's your iPhone. This is yours.
Yeah.
We're gonna get out of here.
Well, imagine being worth $56 million and not being able to have a phone. It's just weird. It's just weird. It's
nuts.
Yeah. So Britney has stated she does not want her dad involved as the conservator, and he just recently, I think within the last couple of days, was removed from the financial aspect of it, and now there is, like, an investment firm that's taking care of her finances, and they're legally in charge, or it's like a half and half thing. But there are steps to, like, removing her dad from this situation, and hopefully, I mean, they continue with that, you know, because it just seems odd. It just seems odd, especially with, you know, you see these public freakouts, like we said, Kanye West and others, and even Shia. What's up with my guy Shia? He's walking around with a paper bag on his head and shit like that, you know? Like, what's going on? Maybe he needed someone in charge of some of this stuff a long time ago. I think one of the biggest things that came from all this was the Justin Timberlake apology. A lot of stuff was highlighted about her relationship with Justin, how the media, once they broke up, Justin kind of went against her. He made Cry Me a River, which was apparently based on her and, you know, supposedly cheating on him. He went on a radio show and said that they had slept together, even though she had been saying she was a virgin. Cringe. And, you know, meanwhile, everyone calls her a whore and everyone's like, hey, Justin Timberlake, you're the man. You know, like, there was a magazine article that said Justin Timberlake, he's done this and this, but most importantly, he got in Britney Spears' pants. But yeah, you know, so he posted a message on Instagram and essentially just saying, hey, I've seen all the messages. I'm deeply sorry for the times of my life where my actions contributed to the problem, or I spoke out of turn or did not speak up for what was right. I understand that I fell short in these moments and in many others and benefited from a system that condones misogyny and racism. Specifically, want to apologize to Britney Spears and Janet Jackson, both individually, because I care for and respect these women and I know I failed. And it goes on. I'm just saying he doesn't want to be part of the problem. He's going to take time to learn. I feel like those are kind of the hits in every apology that we see nowadays. So,
yeah,
you know, him apologizing to Britney after all this time. Do you love it, man? What do you think?
Look, I'm going to tell you this. I'm happy he apologized. I'm stoked about it. This is a step in the right direction, right? We want everyone to grow and be better. I just want to see something more than just an apology. Cry Me a River came out such a long time ago. There's so many years. And I think maybe just me personally as just a fan of Justin Timberlake and Britney Spears, like they were both on the Mickey Mouse Club together. They've been friends for such a long time. Mm-hmm. That was like her first like kind of real like big time boyfriend type thing. Happy for the apology. I just want to see more than just the apology, more than just that post. Something about those dots at the end of the apology too. It doesn't sit right with me. Interesting. I just want to see like more. I want to see more than just the apology.
Let me see these dots.
That's like
it's a two-page apology, and that's just the end of the first page is ... It leads into the next page.
There you go. See, I'm also growing as well. I'm also
I can confirm that page two or screenshot two of the apology ends on a period.
One period?
One period. One single period.
Oof. You just saved him. You just saved him, man. Good job, JT, for potentially not. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's just how I feel. I just want to see more of it. I want to see more, man. I want to see more.
You know, it's definitely good to see growth. And there's no way. I mean, the documentary made him look like an asshole, which he was being at the time. You know, although he was supported by literally everyone in media.
Everyone, well. It's like it's almost like. When he asked him that question, he didn't want to answer it. And then they were like, come on. He's like, okay. And then there you go. That's what we wanted. And it's almost like pressured him into wanting, into saying that or thinking that it was fine.
And I feel like we're not celebrities yet. But no one's your friend. You know, no one's your friend, really. They're all just want to get the good story. So, but at the same time, Justin Timberlake, he was a kid. You know, he was a kid and he said something stupid on a radio show, and all these things are amplified when you're in the public eye. They just are. Now, that's a reality of their situation, right? So that doesn't excuse it, but it is what it is. I'm glad he sent the apology out. Some people, because I read some people saying, like, bro, it's been 17 years. You don't need to apologize. It is what it is. You know, like, I'm sure they've talked since then, like, you know, just move on. But I think it's good, and I'm glad he did send out the apology. And so that kind of leads into some of our quick hits here. You know, so the biggest story probably happening in the last couple weeks, and it's something that's been brewing a little bit and, you know, finally reached a fever pitch, is that Chris Harrison is stepping away from the Bachelor series for an undisclosed amount of time. Due to defending one of the Bachelor contestants who, has been accused of a couple things, but there's some pictures coming up from 2018 where the contestant Rachel was attending an Old South Antebellum-themed party, and Chris Harrison did an interview, and we're going to play a little clip of it for you right now.
A couple of things. First and foremost, I don't know. I haven't talked to Rachel about it. And this is, again, where we all need to have a little grace, a little understanding, a little compassion, because I've seen some stuff online, this judge, jury, executioner thing, where people are just tearing this girl's life apart and diving into, like, her parents and her parents' voting record. And what it's unbelievably alarming to watch this. I haven't heard Rachel speak on this yet. And until I actually hear this woman have a chance to speak, who am I to say any of this? You know, I saw a picture of her at a sorority party 5 years ago, and that's it. Like, boom, like, okay, well, this girl is in this book now, and she's now in this group. And I'm like, really? Okay, well, goes.
The picture was from 2018 at an Old South Antebellum party. So I think, you know, it's not a good look.
No, it's not a good. Well, Rachel, is it a good look in 2018 or is it not a good look in 2021?
It's because not a big good difference. Look ever, because she's celebrating the Old South. If I went to that party, what would I represent at that party?
I don't disagree with you. You're 100% right in 2021. I look at people that have made mistakes. Again, I am not the woke police. There's plenty of people who will do that for us in this world right now. The woke police is out there, and this poor girl, Rachel, who has just been thrown to the lions, I don't know how you are equipped when you have never done this before to be woke enough, to be eloquent enough, to be ready to handle this. And my guess is this woman needs a little time. When is the time, and who is Rachel Lindsay, and who is Chris Harrison, And who is whatever woke police person out there? When, who are you? And that's, I've heard this a lot of like, I think she should. Who the hell are you? When she does speak, what is the reaction? Because you will not please everybody. You're not going to cure this. There is not a way to unwind it. Now, I think she'll be able to give an eloquent enough reason for most reasonable people. But reasonable people aren't on social media. The problem is when you are trying to react to something on social media, there is no grace. There is no understanding. There is, you know, this person who wants to get their voice out there and just as loud as they can. And it does not matter what Rachel says or does. But people will watch this, and depending on how it's edited and how it's cut, are going to have a serious opinion on how I'm speaking. And yeah. And of course, it's luckily I've been around enough, I'm old enough that I know I'm compassionate. I know I have love. I know I have grace and understanding, and I'm still trying to learn.
Okay, so that's a small clip. We cut a couple minutes out. That's actually a full 13-minute interview, so that is not all the context. There's definitely more being said. But that's kind of the greatest hits of that conversation. And after that, there was a lot of backlash. Some of the things he said, I kind of feel like he talked for too long, you know? So, I mean, we cut down our little clip.
Yeah.
That he had a good idea to start out with, you know, where it's kind of like, look, compassion's always good. So he's like, hey, let's give this girl a chance to defend herself. I think that's a fair thing to say generally. But then he's talking about the woke police. And, you know, oh, people are going to, they're going to impose their this and their that. Batman, what are your thoughts on this Chris Harrison video?
I'm going to tell you this. I enjoyed it in the beginning. I did not enjoy it at the end. I once heard like this funny story about someone, you know, getting the interview, going to interview, talking, handling the interview, and then talking themselves out of the job. Like they already had the job, talked themselves out of it during the interview, and then leaves and doesn't get the job. I don't know. I thought it was weird. And I think he just probably didn't, like, he thought he was fine. He thought he was cool. And I don't think he knew some of the stuff he was saying.
Sure. Yeah. I think he got caught up in two different arguments. Yeah. That he just kind of lost himself in. Now, clearly he's passionate about the social media mob. Now, that doesn't have to mean the woke police. That could be anything. There is a certain toxicity.
But who says woke police, man? Who says that?
Someone who is, well, I would say someone someone who feels attacked by them would say it, you know?
What?
The social media mob aspect of the internet. That's not the same as holding people accountable for their actions. Now, it can look the same, I guess, at some time, depending on how you're looking at it. There is a definite toxicity around social media, like people ganging up on someone, attacking something for something. And some of the things that they're even doing with this contestant, like I guess he mentioned something in the longer interview, they're looking at who her parents voted for. And, you know, if they found out they registered Republican, then she must be a racist. And all these things. And so there's a lot of stuff where it's reached, that stuff reaches a toxic level. However, he kind of went on a rant that forgot about some of that and just ended up attacking people for trying to hold someone accountable. Now, you know, part of it is he's just saying, hey, let's give this girl a chance to defend herself. And if he would have just said that, like, hey, I don't agree with what's happening. The biggest thing against this contestant is that she has this picture where she went to an Old South Antebellum theme party.
I really think she's just like uneducated, or she thought things like that played. Maybe she just thought it was fine, you know, and this is from someone that's been to Cinco de Mayo parties, and people have fake mustaches and ponchos and sombreros, and they're finding an excuse to get drunk. They're just, that's all it is. I think they're just finding an excuse to get drunk, and they're just diving all in. And I don't like Chris Harrison saying like, oh, like, all right, guys, a few 18-year-old girls, you know, went out, got dressed, had a party in 2018. That was a long time ago. We're in 2021. Now that doesn't play. Back then it plays, where he was like, well, back then no one was tripping about it, but now everyone's tripping about it. Of course, you wouldn't do that now. Like, well, don't do that ever. Like, and she said that, who was interviewing her, was like, well, it never plays. It's not like you don't do that. I just think she wasn't educated enough, right? She didn't know that might have been offensive, or like if it were to come out, it could be offensive. It is, I mean, it is offensive, that antebellum party.
Yeah, and you know, the 2018 thing really doesn't play because it's 3 years ago. You know, if you were saying, oh, this was 1980, not 2020, we're looking at a different lens, that's a different conversation. These things, it doesn't necessarily make things right, but there's a lot of eye-opening that's been happening and a lot of unintentional ignorance that goes on in the world, right? You know, and
huge.
That ignorance, the tolerance for that ignorance is becoming less and less. And and that makes sense because the issues are more open and more talked about and more, there's more of a speaker for it than there ever has been before. So you can't look at everything and say, oh, well, what about a second chance? It's like, what do you mean a second chance? Everyone know, you already know, you've already heard, you already know everything. You know, it's interesting. I'm sure he'll be back on The Bachelor. I can't imagine this is Chris Harrison's, you know, he's just done on The Bachelor.
No,
he gave his sorry statement and he said he's going to take some time to learn. And he obviously, you know, spoke out of turn and he just went, you know, he's kept saying too many things about the woke police. And it kind of turned into this condescending rant for people who are, you know, trying to promote social change.
Right.
Versus saying, hey, some people on the internet are crazy. Let's not succumb to that. But those are two different conversations. And he kind of blended them into one and it became a disrespectful conversation. The other thing that Chris Harrison messed up with is he's being interviewed by a black woman who clearly is kind of pushing back. Now, he has a relationship with her and he feels close to her, so he feels like he can kind of push. But, you know, at some point, you have to look at the person who's gone through it, or look at the person who's had the experience, look at the person who's affected, and trust when they say they're being affected, be like, oh, okay, well, if you're saying that, I'm going to have to take your word for it, because with my perspective, I just don't know. And he messed up with that, because he just he just kind of kept throwing his opinion out there. So, but it's interesting too, at the end of that clip, he's like, you know, some people will, you know, maybe have a problem with what I said here. And, but you know, I'm old enough and I've lived long enough and I'm still learning. And then plot twist, like, you know, 2 days go by and he's sending out his apology letter. So, there was definitely a level of confidence that he had when he started that conversation that, clearly he does not have anymore. So,
oh yeah,
interesting the way that played out. On a lighter note, before we get into more heavy stuff, we live in a society. We live in a society.
Isn't that just perfect with like everything we're talking about?
We live in a society. Yeah, we should have bookended every like conversation with that. We live in a society.
I know, right?
So, if you guys don't know, this is probably one of the dumbest things we'll cover because it's just like a meme. You know, this is like a Dogecoin type thing. It's just a meme. Like, Justice League Snyder Cut released their first big, like, 2-minute trailer, released the scene with the Joker, which, you know, was a big thing that we were talking about. And in the trailer, the Joker says, "We live in a society." And then he says something. I don't even remember what he says afterward. There was a change.org petition to get Joaquin Phoenix to say, "We live in a society," in the 2018 Joker movie. So the people have wanted this. There was 15,000 signatures on that change.org petition. The people
had a field day on it.
Wanted the Joker to say we live in a society.
Yes.
Just those words. I think the pitch that was on the change.org petition was there was supposed to be a kid playing Fortnite and then a grandpa sitting there reading a newspaper, and the Joker was going to look at both of them and say, "Damn, we live in a society." Like, that was the... that was a thing that whoever made the petition wanted to see in the movie.
What?
So Zack Snyder, he's giving the people what they want. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I mean, Snyder's giving the people what they want. He's like, that's more Snyder. Like, this is perfect. This is perfect. This is, everyone wanted this meme thing to happen. I mean, and that's just what it is. That's the power of the people, man. Like, even when we're talking about that Chris Harrison stuff, like they're ferocious. Or there's very, like, don't come in numbers, you know? So,
yeah,
that petition, I mean, that's not surprising. That's just that's what we are, man. That's what it is. And I was pumped when I saw that just because I know about the meme, and so much so where I thought this was something in the comic books. I thought, like, I was incepted. I thought this meme, because I've seen it so much, I thought it was, like, written in a graphic novel in Batman a long time ago. Plot twist, it's not.
It's not, yeah.
That's just how powerful the meme is. It's so strong, and it's incepted meme. It's funny. It's nuts. And it's just perfect. It's just perfect that it's in it. It's perfect that that this scene's going to happen. And I so hope I could watch this in the movie theater, because I know when he were to say that scene and everyone's sitting in there, people will cheer.
Oh, yeah. People are going to lose their minds. Yeah.
Be pumped.
Now, the flip side for this is, so there's one part of the internet where, like, they're like, Zack Snyder, you're a genius. Thanks for giving the people what they want. There's another aspect where it might just be he just wrote this line and he had no idea this was even a thing, which I feel like might even make more sense for Zack Snyder from what I know about him. That it just he just lucked into this. Up. Yeah. I'm not making it up, but he didn't know. Like, he wrote, like, we live in a society where I forget what the Joker says, but he doesn't just say that line. It's a full sentence. We live in a society where something. Mm-hmm. He might have just written that line and had no idea, or seen the meme but not put it all together, not understanding. I kind of think that's even better.
Yeah, maybe he also, like me, got incepted. And
yeah, right. He was right. Like, yeah, the classic society Joker comic that we all know and love. We're gonna throw a little Easter egg to that in the trailer here.
No, I was thinking more like Inception, where it's like, hey, we need this thought to been organic in his mind, but it's not. We're doing it. And, you know, people just went three different levels and planted in.
Oh, man. You that know? Inception sequel is going to be wild. Can't wait to see that.
Wait, there's an Inception sequel?
No, I was just saying the one you're describing right now.
Oh, I thought you incepted me.
No, yeah.
Believing there's a sequel.
Yeah, dude,
Inception. We live in a society where Inception is real.
So next up here, we got Bam Margera has been fired from Jackass 4 after some pretty wild Instagram videos that he got posted, took them down. There's probably like three or four. I think there was like a 6-minute supercut of some of them. We got some of the audio for you right here to kind of hear what this guy was going through.
Oh,
it's rough. These are definitely, again, this is heavily edited. If you're curious about the full video, look into that, but this is just a couple minute clip.
Who the fuck cares if I'm drunk as hell or not anymore? Jackass has put me through fucking hell on fucking wheels for a year and a half, keeping me in Pennsylvania. I couldn't leave if I left, or else I had to breathe in the sobriety link at 3 o'clock every day, 6 o'clock, 8 o'clock. Then a random beep would go off. No matter where I was at, I had to fucking stop whatever I was doing and go to an urgent care to go piss. Then I had to wake up every day with a handful of antidepressant pills that I would have to show Paramount Pictures that I took them and swallowed them every single day. They set me up with such a fucking hard mission. And then COVID happened for a year against anyone's knowledge. Like, I had to spend $90,000 in a rehab for 90 days at my expense. I wrote them so many ideas, and if I'm not in the movie and they use my ideas, how do you think that that'll make me feel? The last thing I want to do is be in a courtroom with Jeff fucking Tremaine. I love him. What the fuck, man? I'm not in Jackass 4. If anybody cares about me, don't go see their movie, because I will make mine way fucking ratter if you just Venmo me a dollar. Just a buck. If you send $100, I'll remember your name and write it down and straightly. If you send more than that, and I'll do more. But Jackass was everything to me. Fuck you, Knoxville. Fuck you, Spike. Fuck you, Jeff. You fuckers never cared about me, man.
All right. So clearly, this guy's drunk. You know, and that's kind of the first thing, you know, when you're listening to this, it's like, man, this guy's going through something. You know, I'm not sure, after watching that Britney documentary, I feel like my response is much more, like, empathetic than it might have been. Not that it would have been a bad response before, but,
yeah,
you know, let's make sure this guy gets some help. I almost feel like he got fired from Jackass 4 because he broke contract And, you know, if you listen to the clip, he had a lot of stipulations in that contract. So he obviously missed a breathalyzer or missed a piss test or something. But if he's really going through this, I don't know if a Jackass set is the best place for anyone who's a volatile mental condition anyway.
Yeah.
So it seems like the best case scenario that he's just going to get help right now.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks. I mean, it's unfortunate this is happening to him. When you talk about empathetic, it's also like that soft spot. I think we're both Jackass fans.
Yeah.
We've grown up with this man, and seeing him where he's at now, he's 41, bro. He's looking like a strong, like 50 something.
Yeah.
You know, he's not looking good, and he hasn't been for a while. And it sucks because I know this isn't like, I know this could, I don't want to say be fixed because this is with him for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
His alcoholism. I know it is, but I know there's better days. Like, I know there is. One of his best friends, sober guy, now completely sober, changed over his life and is doing like sober crusades pretty much. And with all these things that he had to do just to be in Jackass 4, I was like, yes, this is why. This is this drunk little video. This is why we were so hard on you, bro, because of this. And then you're asking for money to make a better Jackass 4, hoping someone sends you 100 so you could maybe remember his name. Like, that's like one of the worst like things I've ever heard. Like, you're not gonna get that money back. Like, what? Like, you're not gonna he's not gonna make this movie. Yeah.
Do not Venmo Bam Margera.
Yeah, I think he throws, I mean, shout out to Dubs for cutting off the throw up sounds, but he throws up literally right after that our clip ends. It's just like yak. It's just him on his sink just throwing up. And he said he had like 7 beers and a bottle of wine. I think he had more than that. But you're right, Dubs. Like, him being on that set, maybe like him being around those guys and doing all that, maybe it's not the right place for him to grow and be healthy. But I'm still rooting for him. I am still rooting for him.
Oh yeah, I mean, definitely rooting for him in the sense that I want him to be okay. I definitely am like not rooting for him. He clearly wasn't fully ready to be in that situation, and now he's pushing at people and he's attacking people that, you know, I'm sure he's regretting attacking right now, but he's upset and it is what it is. But hopefully he can get the help he deserves. You know, Jackass started in 2000. You know, and these guys weren't 12 when it started. So the amount of surgeries that Johnny Knoxville has had, and I'm sure, you know, Bam, Steve-O, it's all the same. They've gone under the knife 1,000 times. They've got 1,000 medical issues because of all these stunts they've done. And the, you know, like you said, he looks older than he is, for sure. He's not looking great. Hopefully, at least, you know, when you see Steve-O now, he's got life in his eyes.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's older because he's just older. And again, he's done all these drugs and done all these crazy surgeries and stunts and stupid tattoos and every other thing that Steve-O did. But he's got the life there. So hopefully, we see that life in Bam's eyes sometime soon, because I can't remember the last time. I mean, I feel like the last couple months, even when his car got stolen and crashed, I mean, the video where he was talking about that, He didn't look like he was 100% there, 100% ready. So, man, good luck, Bam. And next up, we got the Cruella trailer starring Emma Stone, new Disney movie. I'll tell you what. There are 1,000 things I could have guessed about this Cruella trailer. My interest level was probably at a gracious 10% out of 100. Because, again, I just see it as like a kid's movie. I don't have kids right now. You know, it's like, okay, well, so, you know, it is what it is. It's not for me. Like, I'm not excited because it's not for me. Whatever trailer I just watched, that movie is for me. That movie looks dope, bro. Like, this is Emma Stone as Cruella De Vil.
Right.
Looking like the Joker. Like, that's what it is. It just looks like Joaquin Phoenix's Joker.
Yeah.
Or Cruella De Vil. And when you said, we talked about it a little bit earlier, the part where the Dalmatians are like barking at her in that party.
What's up with that?
Oh, yeah. It's so intense, bro. I'd be mad too. I'd be trying to skin them too, bro. Those dogs are out of control. I was, oh my gosh. There's a big caveat here. There's a big caveat for my excitement. Yeah. The rating on this movie. If they come at me with a PG rating, that trailer lied to me, bro. It lied to me. That trailer set a tone. That trailer made some promises to me. If those promises are not kept, if this movie is not at least PG-13, I know it's not going to be rated R. I'm not an idiot. But if this movie's not PG-13, I'm pissed. I'm
sorry. Yeah, give me a PG-13. Yeah, it has to be PG-13.
It has to.
What is it with Hollywood's fascination with the Joker right now? Everything is just Joker.
It works. People liked it.
Cruella de Vil, Joker. They freaking handled it. And it's it is like an origin movie, right? It is Cruella de Vil, you know.
Yeah.
Who she was and,
yeah, how and, she got
and
to be.
How she becomes who she becomes mm-hmm. and has some crazy life changes. And I'm taking this movie seriously. I don't think it's a joke. I'm pumped. I am yeah. taking it seriously. I'm like, whoa, this is a different type of Disney movie that I'm going to see here. I hope, you know, I hope. And I hope there's more Dalmatians than just those three that I saw. I'm trying to see all 100. Yeah. Hopefully it ends with like 100 of them.
Yeah, all like being skinned like some science project in
high school. Maybe not that way.
Oh, yeah, pretty metal, bro.
That's like the Shudder,
Yeah, the director's cut. Give me the Snyder cut, Cruella. He's like,
we want to see the skin dogs. I know it's there. I know it's there. We want to see it.
It looks cool. So when I was watching it, and again, I'm very invested in this rating. Like PG's not enough. So there's a part where it looks like she's holding a bottle of liquor and like walking in a room. I don't know. Can you hold a bottle of liquor in a PG movie? Like, is that kosher? I don't know if it is.
If it doesn't have a label, I mean, it could look like liquor-esque.
Damn, it might have been apple juice, huh? Damn. All right. No, those dogs were too scary, man. I don't know. It's got to be PG-13. So you just got to give me that. I did many Google searches, like Cruella, like anticipated rating, what's going on. I couldn't find anything. But if that's not PG-13, you can miss me with all that. I
think it's going to be fun.
Oh, I'm
watching her into like just go into madness. And I don't like people that are saying like, oh, it's too much like the Joker, like be original. Like sometimes some of that stuff plays. It's fun. It's good.
You know, movies are constantly inspired by other movies, you know, and so there are certain movies that define kind of the next generation of movies too. I don't know if Joker is one of those movies. This happens all the time, right? Where there's an R-rated adult entertainment that mm-hmm. does well. And then people are like, oh my gosh, you can make money with an R-rated movie. It happens like once every 4 months, I feel like. The Joker was a superhero movie. I mean, they already did it with Logan. That had success. Deadpool is kind of a different vibe completely.
Deadpool is, well. I was going to say like that's a rated R one that worked. And they're like, hey, we'll just keep doing it.
Yeah, but Deadpool is tonally extremely hard to match. You can't make a Joker movie like Deadpool, right?
No.
It's very specific to Deadpool and kind of his antics. But, you know, like Logan, you can emulate. The Joker, you can emulate. You know, you can kind of have these, like, anti-heroes and just, you know, someone fall apart. So we'll see how it goes. Not that Logan's an anti-hero. It's just a very dark, dreary kind of tale, right? And so I like it. I think it looks cool. I'm here for it. I think Emma Stone looked dope in it. She just looked like a baddie. She looked confident as hell. She's ready to take on the world.
She is a fashion designer. I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Please don't skin any dogs. I would cry.
No, that'd be all bad. That'd be all bad.
I mean, but that's like her end game, right? Like, that's what she wants to do. Like, isn't that crazy? It's like what if she actually gets a hand on a dog? Like, well, that dog's going to get skinned. She'll make a nice coat.
Yeah, but like a sick coat, you know? Like a sick coat, dude.
I'm just playing.
Hopefully,
I'm not going to buy a Dalmatian. Go to your house. You're like, hey, brother, you ever thought about making a t-shirt with that? Be sick. Be nice.
Yeah, don't bring any Dalmatians around. All right. And next we got here the Mortal Kombat trailer. Probably, I would say a trailer again, like Cruella, that I was not super excited for because I've been hurt before. I've been disappointed before. This shit was dope, man. I was not expecting this at all. And you always feel good when you see that it's going to be a red band, like the R-rated trailer. You see that red band? And you're like, okay, so we're about to really get excited.
Uh-huh. You know it's going to be rated R. You know it's going to be gory or bloody or just crude. I get so excited. I feel like I haven't seen a red brand trailer in a long time.
And it's great coming from a big studio because, you know, they're just trying to set the tone for that. I mean, a lot of indies will have their little red bands and stuff like that. But for, you know, a big studio to come out, throw a red band out as the first trailer, they're saying we're giving the people what they want. You know, Mortal Kombat is probably one of the most violent video game series that exists. And we've been getting a lot of PG-13 movies. There's a little TV show. They did like an R-rated animated version, but this is content that when you look at the games and it's like hard, you know, mature games where people are getting their limbs ripped off, the movies have not matched that intensity at all. And yeah. Finally, we get some wild stuff here. So I'm here for it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was very pumped. It could still be bad. Like I could still see the movie being terrible. Oh, yeah. But I mean, they definitely know how to target their target audience. They got me. I mean, freaking Sub-Zero makes a freaking like sword thing out of someone's blood, and attacks him with it.
Yeah,
that's badass. That was awesome.
Thing. That was probably the coolest.
Freaking Kato, freaking rips a heart out from someone, and he laughs about it.
Yeah,
and
just holding it.
Jax gets his arms ripped off, and you see his mechanical arms were, you know, it's known in the video game series. And freaking Scorpion says, "Get over here." Like, what more do you want? This is fun. And there was a montage of just all these killings.
Yeah, man. It looks super cool. I'm here for it. I totally agree with the fact that it can still be bad. 100%. This movie can be bad. Probably will not be good, but it looks cool. And it's going to be bloody. This movie has to be bloody. And the fact that they made these movies like not extremely gory for some time is insane. So we're getting at least the gory version. We're getting heads ripped off, arms ripped off. Like you said, literally cuts this guy. Like I forget how he cuts him, but blood squirts out. He freezes the blood in midair, makes it a spike, and then stabs him with the spike of his own blood. What more do you want? You know, and this is one of those things where I think we have to take a step back as people, as human beings, understand our reality, understand the universe we're in right now. And there's so much going on. Everyone should be able to appreciate that. So I don't want to be a movie watcher that's so jaded that I can't, I need to be excited when I see someone get stabbed with their own frozen blood, because that was just cool. I don't ever want to not appreciate that. Just want to take a second. So everyone take a step back and just appreciate what we're going to get. That's awesome.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely.
That's HBO. That's another HBO Max hitter. Comes out April 16th. I can't wait. You know, I'll just be at home watching this. And if theaters are open, it says it's coming out in IMAX too. So that's a movie to watch in IMAX for sure.
That's gonna be fun. Do you think that's a drive-in worthy movie?
Oh yeah. Well, so I think everything's a drive-in worthy movie. If you have a pickup truck. If you don't, then it's not really the same. But you got a pickup truck, awkwardly. It's perfect.
You're like sneaking a beer, making sure the freaking driving police don't see you.
There's no driving police. It's a party out there for sure. Well, now you're not supposed to like get out of your car and stuff because of COVID, and there's a bunch of weird rules and everything. But it's one of those, it smells like a concert, you know, when you're there for sure. It's definitely just weed lingering in the air and everything. It's not a, it's not a pure place. That's fun. All right. So let's hop into our reviews here. So we got a double feature reviews tonight. We're doing Saint Maud and Judas and the Black Messiah. So we got a lot to talk about here. Let's start out with Saint Maud. So synopsis, Saint Maud follows a pious nurse who becomes dangerously obsessed with saving the soul of her dying patient. This is written and directed by Rose Glass. It is starring Morfydd Clark. The name is spelled Morfydd, and Jennifer Ely, Lily Knight. I was about to say there is a couple dudes in this movie. This is a very female driven movie with a female writer director, but there's a couple guys towards the end there. Rotten Tomatoes for this movie has critics at a 93%, very high, and the audience score a little bit lower, but still good at 70%. Man, what are your thoughts on Saint Maud?
I absolutely loved this movie.
Okay.
What a great film. There's a thin line between mental illness and just being a religious fanatic.
Yeah.
And it was a trip watching this just unfold. This woman that, it's like, do you love God? I do. It's like, but do you love God? And homegirl really loved.
She's a huge fan.
Huge fan of God. Huge fan. And it was weird. It was so weird. It's right up my alley. Religious-y horror film. Not a lot of dialogue. A lot of weird scenes. I loved it. I loved everything about it. She's this like respiratory nurse, right? Or what? A caretaker? She's like a caretaker.
Yeah.
I didn't know she was gonna be a little nutty. Yeah. And then every time she prayed and had like an orgasm after she like while praying, like the outcome, I was like, this is not good.
This rough. The writer director called them godgasms. So I don't know if you feel comfortable saying that just out loud, or if it's a little too heathenish. But it's she
I'm not going to say that. But I think it's hilarious that they came up with a term like, oh yeah, we thought it was like cute. We thought it was funny. This is what we named it. Because I don't think this is a movie that's going to drive you away from going to church or being really. I don't think so. I think this is a movie.
Oh yeah, no, it's just a movie.
You're gonna. But you don't know, like you don't. There's some dumb people out there that might like see that and be like, "See, that's why I don't go to church." Because if you see Saint Maud, well, that woman Maud out there, she's out there having an orgasm every time she prays.
I mean, if anything, there'd be a reason to go. I don't know, man.
A bunch of freaks like, "Hey, is this the one? Is this the right church?" Because I heard,
oh man,
I heard you have a lot of fun here. I heard prayer time is the time to come.
to what? Just kidding. Oh my gosh.
Oh man, we're not dirty comedians. I swear, we're not dirty comedians.
It's off the rails.
If I could compare it to a lot of movies, I'll compare it to like The Lodge, where like religious stuff happens. Mm-hmm. We're repenting. Sometimes people, man, they take that repenting a little bit too hard. Yeah. And it did surprise me. There is a little mystery. Like there is a little mystery. I don't know who this woman is. And during the movie, you see like stuff from her past kind of come out. Just talk to your friends. Make sure you talk to your friends all the time. Make sure if you had a friend and your friend like left town and went to a different town and you haven't heard of that person in a long time, check up on that person. Just make sure they're all right. Make sure they're okay.
I agree with you for the most part. So definitely, I mean, you touched on the religion a lot, and it is called Saint Maud, and there is, the whole movie talks about religion, and she's trying to save the soul. Uh-huh. That being said, at its core, this is just a movie about mental illness, essentially.
Yeah.
So with that backdrop, but it's almost like, it's one of those things where, you know, I don't think anyone would see it as like a negative, because it's none of it is God's fault. She's just a crazy person and is using God to facilitate the crazy, right? But the movie's wild. So there's a couple things it's got going for it. One, it is short. Even though it's short, it's still a slow burn. I don't know how it did that, but I still like the process. I still like the process. If someone was like, hey, the first 45 minutes of that movie, 50 minutes of the movie really dragged, I'd be like, you know what? You're not wrong. So there's a lot going on, and it does kind of chip away at that, like, oh, is she just crazy? Like, is she just super religious? Like, what is that? And then, obviously, as the story goes on, you see that she's, of course, just insane. It's really interesting, man, and it's super creepy. It's got a good creepy vibe. It feels very A24. It is a horror movie. I wouldn't call it scary, but it's definitely kind of that psychological horror where you just see her deteriorating. I think it was an effective movie, not really a horror movie, but I liked it a lot. I liked it a lot. And by the end, I had a big smile on my face. For better or worse, I was smiling when I was like, It was like, I was one of those where I'm just like, you son of a bitch. Look at that. Look at that.
Well, it's good because it doesn't. Like, if you're expecting jump scares, you're not going to get jump scares.
Yeah.
And I think that's good. I think sometimes you see these jump scares in these horror movies, and you need them for it to be a horror movie, to be scary. Sometimes you just need to see a crazy person just be crazy. Like, there's, like, some supernatural stuff that you're like, oh, that's not believable, or I don't believe in that. And so and so this movie kind of keeps you on your toes. You're like, man, well, actually, is this supernatural, or is this just a crazy person? And it kind of takes you into that fun kind of, like, not knowing where it's going to go ride. And I really enjoyed it. That ending, too, I freaking loved it so much. Cheesing. I was a big fan.
I like that we both said we're kind of like smiling, like / chuckling at the end of the movie, because I just hope someone hears this, then watches the movie, and it's like, the fuck is wrong with you guys? But it was just kind of, it was just so crazy the way it went down.
They're like, I there was no smile. I was not smiling. Yeah.
I can definitely imagine
you were
someone
cheesy. Yeah. Madman was cheesy. Yeah. Why? Now I know he's a madman because.
Yeah. No, but it's just there's certain about a certain like tonal shift where it's just you can't, you just got to appreciate it and just be like, damn, there you go. You got me.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
Right. The main actress, Morfydd Clark, she was awesome. She did so well. And then Jennifer L, who's the woman she was watching, did really well also.
Shout out to her. Yeah, she did a great job.
Solid indeed. So, what do you want to, how do you want to rate this one, Madman?
Let's do Rosaries.
Rosaries? All right. So, hit us with your score. You can rate this one first. I'll rate Judas first.
Okay. Well, damn. I'm going to give this one a 91. I really enjoyed this movie a lot. I like everything about it. I loved it. Even I wasn't sure how it was going to end. The ending was probably one of my perfect endings. It reminded me so much of, I'm telling you, like The Lodge. It reminded me of how I felt when I saw Midsommar. It reminded me of just these like great movies that I just really enjoyed. I enjoyed this one. Yeah. I'm so freaking upset I did not get any St. Maud A24 merch when it dropped.
Ooh. Is it sold out?
It's sold out, yeah. And I know Dubs copped a shirt.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait.
Super jealous of that.
Yeah, I like the 91. I feel like that's I feel like it's a little high, but it's fair. I'm going to rate this one an 86. Okay. Rosaries out of 100, which I think it's a great movie. This is one that might hop in the top 10 list at the end of the year. I could definitely see that happening. I liked it a lot. I think it was really good. When it comes to grading this as like a horror movie, I think that's where it's losing a couple points in my book. Still enjoyed the ride though. I think 86 is, I mean, 86 is a high score. I think it's a fair score, and that's where I'm at with it. Next movie here, we got Judas and the Black Messiah. So the synopsis here is, this is the story of Fred Hampton, chairman of the Illinois Black Panther Party, and his fateful betrayal by the FBI informant, William O'Neill. The Rotten Tomatoes score here is a 96 for critics and audience. Both are at 96.
Nice.
Which is wow, super, super high. This is directed by Shaka King, written by Will Burson and Shaka King. And it is starring Daniel Kaluuya of Get Out fame. We got Lakeith Stanfield, one of my favorites, and someone who I'm just going to have to start respecting, Jesse Plemons.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. Put some respect on his name.
Oh, yeah. Does. I have not been. I've been calling him Fat Damon this whole time. He's now Jesse Plemons. This is, he's getting the
respect. Calling him Meth Damon. They were calling him Meth Damon.
That's rough, dude. No, not after the Britney documentary. We can't talk like this. Sorry, Jesse. Sorry, I'm not gonna cut it out, but we're sorry, Jesse. we can't be these people. So, Judas and the Black Messiah. I'll let you tell us how you feel about it. But one of the things that stuck out with me from watching it to even now, still resonating with me, besides some scenes that were wildly powerful, when Fred Hampton is talking to some people and kind of teaching. He's like, politics are war without violence, and war is politics with violence. And that has stuck with me. That has resonated with me. And it's just, it's a wild movie. Madman, what are your thoughts here?
No, super powerful. I think with you saying that quote right there, super powerful. The scene that stuck with me the most was the, I am a revolutionary.
Huge.
I am a revolution. And everyone, and you see, in that scene particularly, you see Fred Hampton. You see William Bill O'Neill. You know, you see the movement. I think that was like at a reaching. That was like at a point where, after that scene, you know, the movie plays out the way that it plays out, and I didn't think I was gonna be this entertained with this movie because it is kind of old news. This did happen a long time ago. But also, I wasn't very educated in this. I wasn't very educated in Fred Hampton and this movement and what happened in the movie. And I'm like, oh wow, that's kind of crazy that they edited it this way or they made it go this way. And then I look it up, do my research. I'm like, oh no, that really did happen. Super powerful, super good. A lot, great, great freaking acting. The acting freaking killed it. and with even like Jesse Plemons, where I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. I already know who this guy is. I enjoy him, but more and more, the more and more I see him, the more and more he's becoming one of my favorite actors. Daniel Kaluuya, who I didn't think he was, like, when I saw Black Panther and he's in it, right? And he's one of the guys. I was like, weak. This guy is weak. All right, why? All he could really do is Get Out. Like, if he does more movies, is whatever. He freaking stole it, dude. He did such a great job. I feel like when you're talking about putting respect on Jesse Plemons' name, I gotta do that with Daniel Kaluuya, because he, as an actor, did such a great job. I know he's gonna get nominated for a lot of awards because he did so great. Shout out to Lakeith Stanfield too. I loved him. He's been one of my guys. We're the same age, and he's been a good guy in every role he's played. A huge fan. I'm such a big fan of this movie.
I gotta echo those sentiments about the actors. Daniel Kaluuya playing Fred Hampton easily steals the show. I don't know. I guess some people were saying he's gonna get like he may fall into the supporting actor role here, like Lakeith Stanfield, really? Maybe like the primary actor, and he's the supporting actor. If that's the case, I feel like the scene, the I am a revolutionary scene. It's probably, I mean, one of the most electric scenes I've seen so far this year, even though it's been a very short year. It's so powerful. I mean, that's an Oscar-winning scene, if you ask me. He was so good in it. I read something, too, where they were talking about the fact that Jaden Smith was once in talks to play Fred Hampton. Maybe not for this specific biopic, but for another one. And I can't imagine that happening. But they said the reason for that, because he was so young at the time. Now, Daniel Kaluuya doesn't look young, but you find out Fred Hampton was 21 years old when he got killed. Yeah. When I saw that at the end of the movie, and I know you had the same reaction, my jaw dropped. I was shocked that this kid was 21 years old. I wish they would have made that like more prevalent while I was watching the movie. I'm almost excited to go back and watch it with that perspective. And then that Lakeith Stanfield character, William O'Neill, when he was picked up by the FBI, he was only 17. And that's when he started infiltrating, you know, the Black Panther organization. He was 17 years old. You know, he's just a kid. And he ends up killing himself later in life, which was named Judas and the Black Messiah. That's kind of where it comes from.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you know what? When you talk about casting, it kind of makes sense that they were thinking about Jaden Smith, you know, portraying him, because Kelvin Harrison Jr., he portrays him in Trial of Chicago 7. And you know Kelvin Harrison Jr. from Waves. And I remember watching Trial of Chicago 7. I'm like, who is this kid? That kid is Fred Hampton. <You know? laughs> And I'm like, oh, shoot. That's Fred Hampton? Why is he so young?
Yeah.
Idiot. You know, because I had no idea he was 21. And it makes everything so powerful. Like, just like how you're saying, it makes it so powerful, because you're like, damn, these guys were young when O'Neill is 17, right? They get him at 17, and they're like, hey, pretty much you work for us, or you're gonna go to jail for a long time, buddy. And what do you want? He's like, oh, I don't want to go to jail. And just seeing everything kind of convey, like, I'm telling you, all these emotions, all these like situation, intense situations. This was an intense time.
If there's anything I would have against this movie, it was that the FBI side of it, you know, especially the COINTELPRO program, I think could use a lot more illuminating. And of course, there's other resources you could look into. Every story can't tell every angle, but I would have liked to see more of that, because it's essentially just government surveillance and disruption of civil, like, social justice movements. You know, it's kind of crazy to, you know that it even existed, and kind of the way it existed. And the, you know, there's a very, very powerful scene in this movie where Lakeith Stanfield and Jesse Plemons are having dinner. He asks him, he says, you know, just have you been to his house? You know, have you been to Fred Hampton's house? I just write down the layout of the house. And he's like, why? You know, he's like, just do it. You know, and he's understanding that he's going to get murdered. He knows it's going to happen. And it's such a heavy scene.
Bro, he tells him, he's like, I mean, you're not going to kill him, right?
And it doesn't say anything.
Just Plemons kind of just like takes a sip of his tea, kind of just smirks, you know, and just doesn't say anything. And yeah. that's all he needed to know. Like, that's all it, man.
Yeah. And it weighed heavy on his heart. You know, he was feeling it. He felt it. So I think that was one of the powerful scenes. I think I don't want to take away from the, you know, I'm a revolutionary scene, because I think that was intense. But I think that scene at the end of the movie is probably my favorite scene, just with those two going at it.
I mean, it definitely made me feel very uncomfortable. It made me feel like I had no hope here, you know, because he had, like, that's why I freaking love and I hate Jesse Plemons so much, because he can play a great villain. And he doesn't need to do much. Mm-hmm. He already has a punchable kind of face, you know, but he's just so good in every freaking role that he does. You know, Martin Sheen, he has a few scenes too. Yeah. There was also another uncomfortable scene with Jesse Plemons. I won't talk about it, so you know, you the audience, when you watch it, you'll know what I'm talking about. These are the worst kind of people here.
Oh, yeah.
And just the way it plays out with Fred Hampton and just everything around it, it's all very unfortunate. It's all very just, you just can't help but to be angry. And the fact that O'Neill kills himself at 40, the day where his interview comes out on TV, I'm not surprised. People say it was an accident. You know damn well that wasn't an accident.
I wasn't sure what to expect. I don't think my expectations were not super high, actually, even though I really like Lakeith Stanfield. I just didn't think it was going to be that entertaining. And it ended up being entertaining and also thought-provoking at the same time, which, you know, if you can get the double whammy, why not? You rated the last one first, so I'll rate this one. What do you want to rate this one by?
Fake FBI badges.
Fake FBI badges? All right, we'll rate it by that. I like that. I like that, fake FBI badges. I'm going with a 92 out of 100.
Oh.
92 out of 100. Strong 92 out of 100. There's not a lot I didn't like about this movie. I'm not going to, you know, dissect some of those things too much. The pacing of it is what kept it a little low for me. And then I wanted more from the COINTELPRO aspect. Not too much more. But in that 2-hour, 6-minute runtime, I feel like they could have given me a little bit more. Just kind of how intense that movement really was. Or, you know, that program for the FBI really was. And I guess technically still is. I'm curious to know more about it, actually.
Yeah, which is good, though. I think it's good to watch this movie and want to get more information, investigate, educate yourself, be more knowledgeable in all this. So I am going to give it a big ol' 96.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, if feels right with me. I that's how I feel. But 96, I like that number. I really enjoy this movie, man. And
better than Sound of Metal.
It is better Sound of Metal by a little bit more. Still very enjoyable. And I almost had it at 95, but I just loved it. I loved it more. Every scene was great. Pacing, I get what you're saying, though, when it comes to the pacing. Yeah. I totally get it. There was a few scenes, or especially when he was away, when he was, like, in prison. I think right after when he gets out of it, the I Am a Revolutionary scene comes in, and it just, like, kind of, like, woke me up or, like, got me in it. And and I loved it.
All right. Well, I think that wraps up our episode for today. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll catch you next week. I think we're doing Nomadland next week, which I've heard is a very, very slow burn. So I don't give a shit how many people like it. If I don't like it, I'll let you guys know.
There we go.
Catch you next week. Peace out. Hey, guys, that sounded great. Can we get everyone to reset? All right, take 2.